I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan. And today we have with us one of our colleagues, Dr. Catherine Marwitz. Dr. Marwitz, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Hi, everyone. My name again, Catherine Marwitz. I'm a pharmacist by training. I've also done a little bit of extra training in public health. I got my master in public health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, where I studied epidemiology and pharmacoepidemiology. And I'm super excited to talk with you guys today about this topic.
We are super excited to have you because we're going to talk a little bit about herd immunity. And I think that as pharmacists, we all know kind of what, we know some basics about herd immunity, but we don't maybe know all the ins and outs of herd immunity. And so it's kind of exciting to talk to you about herd immunity and as it has to do, you know, specifically with COVID. So just to start out, can you tell us what is herd immunity?
Yeah, so herd immunity, I think we always think about it in terms of vaccinations. So this idea that if we get enough people in the community immunized against a certain infectious disease, then we can create this environment of herd immunity where so many people are vaccinated that the infectious disease would be hard to kind of spread around. In addition, herd immunity can protect some individuals who maybe aren't eligible to be vaccinated. So we have young babies, maybe persons who are pregnant or people who have conditions that would prevent them from being able to get vaccinated. So if those people cannot get vaccinated, but everyone else gets vaccinated, then we can theoretically create this environment of herd immunity. And that's kind of in the vaccination sense. In terms of COVID, we don't have a vaccine, obviously. So this idea of herd immunity can also theoretically apply to an infectious disease that's circulating that so many people can get infected with that disease, hopefully build up some sort of antibody response so that next time the virus is kind of circulating in the community, they have some immunity towards it, this kind of like more natural, in quotations, immunity. That would theoretically prevent the disease from kind of spreading around because everyone would have already had it. So herd immunity applies, again, with vaccinations. That's often where we think about it. But some people will talk about it in terms of getting enough people infected with the disease to kind of create that similar sense of herd immunity.
And if we think about herd immunity, is there like a threshold, like 80% of people need to have antibodies or 20%, is there a threshold that's normally considered to be herd immunity?
Yeah, so there isn't this official number, but oftentimes it has to be very, very high. So in the sense of vaccinations, herd immunity is achieved at 95% of people vaccinated, 97% of people vaccinated, 99% of people vaccinated. And I would say the same would apply with kind of this infectious disease herd immunity type of thing. So a lot of people, most of the population, almost everybody within the population would have to have been infected and develop some sort of immune response in order to fight off that disease. So yeah, 95%, 98%, something very, very high.
Because we certainly are interested in COVID right now, and tell me if I'm off base, but I kind of think of herd immunity with COVID as it stands now as kind of chickenpox in the 70s and 80s, where you try to get everybody exposed to it then so that you wouldn't have a more severe reaction when you got older. Do you think that's a fair comparison to maybe the COVID situation right now when we're talking about how herd immunity might be comparable?
Yeah, I think it's a fair comparison as to what the public's kind of thinking about COVID. So can we all go out and get exposed as much as possible right now to kind of say, hey, you know, I'll get my infection done and gone and kind of move on with my life. There was actually a lot of talk in Wuhan, China, back in December, kind of January time, where there were a lot of people being interviewed by the news who were kind of saying, the anticipation of getting sick is what's scaring me the most. I kind of just want to get it and get it done with. So we hear the public saying that a lot. The public health community is certainly not kind of speaking to that as much, but the public, I think I hear that with individuals all the time. I just kind of want to get it and get it done.
Well, why is that bad? Because like, I mean, and I bring that up, I love my father and I don't know if he listens to this podcast, but he told me that exact same thing. He's like, I just want to get it and get it done so that I can, you know, have a good Christmas and not have to worry about it. And can you kind of explain to us, I know that this isn't necessarily due to herd immunity, but can you explain to us why that's a bad idea?
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons why kind of saying, I just want to get sick and get it done with is a bad idea. First and foremost is that we don't actually have a lot of research right now to say who will get COVID and do completely fine. They'll be sick for a while and recover and kind of move on with their lives, and who might develop some sort of kind of severe response to COVID, maybe end up being hospitalized, put in the intensive care unit, potentially, you know, be sick for months and months or even years. So we have some thoughts that maybe some individuals with some chronic diseases, individuals who are older, some of those folks are potentially more likely to develop a severe reaction to COVID, but really everyone is susceptible. And so this idea of, I kind of just want to get it and move on, there's actually no guarantee that you'll get it and move on. You might end up being sick for quite a long time. In addition, I think, you know, we talked a lot about this in the beginning of COVID in the US, where we're working on flattening the curve. So this idea that hospitals can't possibly take, you know, hundreds and thousands of people who are getting sick with COVID at one time. And so we need to do our best to prevent that infection. Otherwise, we're going to create this environment called surge, where hospitals have so many people coming in who are sick and not enough people to treat you. So this assumption that you can kind of just get sick and move on. Again, what if you don't move on? And in addition, what if you need to go to the hospital and there isn't enough room for you to get treated? And so we have a lot of things in place to kind of stop the spread of infection. There's a lot of non-pharmacological approaches that we can do. We can wash our hands and wear masks, social distance. And those are good ways to kind of prevent the infection so that you don't kind of risk getting sick and then potentially getting very, very sick that will significantly impact your life.
Catherine, another question I wanted to ask, and I'm not sure, the data I know is pretty scarce on this, but there's also this risk of reinfection with COVID-19. Is there anything you can speak to related to kind of that time frame or concerns related to reinfection?
Yeah, so Ryan, I think I know what you're talking about. There was a recent kind of case in the news. I think it came from a case report from The Lancet. And it was a young gentleman around the age of like 25 or so. And this gentleman had COVID, did okay. It was a fairly minor infection, had symptoms, tested positive. We have that data, recovered and so forth. And then I think a month or two later, ended up having symptoms again. They did a COVID test and they sequenced the virus that he was infected with. It was actually a different virus. It was the same COVID, but it was a different strain, further proving that this gentleman had COVID once and then had COVID again. I would say that's one case report. I think there's been some other reports internationally and potentially another one or two in the US. But all that's to say is the research is extremely limited, but I would be inclined to say that it appears possible that you can get COVID once, recover and get COVID again. And then worse off, this gentleman who developed COVID a second time, he was actually worse off. He was hospitalized. He was much more sick that second time. And so, you know, the research is so limited. It's hard to say, you know, a second COVID infection is always going to be worse than the first. We certainly cannot say that, but there's at least some low level evidence that that's possible, that you can get reinfected and that the second time you get infected, it's not like a minor infection. It could potentially be severe. And that was in a young gentleman. So this is not technically a immunocompromised individual or anything like that.
This has all been really great information. If, you know, our listeners wanted to learn more either about herd immunity in general or herd immunity as it applies to COVID, can you suggest some resources that might be good or a place that they might want to go if they want to learn more about it?
Yeah, so I've been reading a lot in some of the more kind of peer-reviewed journals, the New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet. They have all of their COVID information outside of a paywall, so you can freely access that even if you don't subscribe to the journal. There's been several researchers who've put out letters and research studies as to why herd immunity is not a good approach for COVID. I've also seen several professional organizations like the American Public Health Association. They've put out a pretty strong stance on why herd immunity is not a good strategy, pointing to disproportionate impacts of vulnerable and marginalized and underserved communities, as well as kind of the scientific data showing that we can actually stop the spread or slow the spread of COVID if we do some of these non-pharmacological measures. So I've seen some professional organizations and the peer-reviewed literature kind of speak to this. And those have been great resources for me. I think the news is covering it too, but I tend to like to go straight to the source where that news article kind of comes from. So peer-reviewed literature, American Public Health Association has had some good information, at least for me.
Catherine, thank you so much for this information, and kudos on being a good scientist and going to the source for your information.
They made it easy this time. I don't have to log into anything. So it's great that it's publicly available. We need that in the scientific community, get that information out there so everyone can read it.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thank you, everyone.